Coming up on 10:20. Is your client present?
I don't know that he is, Your Honor. He was hoping to log in. He's having some difficulties, so I just told him we would begin and he could keep trying.
Okay. All right. Then we will get going this morning. Our second case on the oral calendar is A20-1479 Klug versus Ellens. Counsel, I'm going to ask that you please mute your microphone if you're not speaking. The marshal is showing a running clock of your time. You will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and the appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. I'm going to ask that you identify yourself before you begin speaking. These proceedings are being recorded. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Thomas Mannion. I represent the appellant, and I'm in Lanesboro, Minnesota, where I practice, and I'm licensed in Minnesota. And we're here today, Your Honors, because the trial court reversed its judgment in favor of appellant, my client, by allowing an impeachment evidence that was available to respondent during the trial. In other words, the court reopened its decision on the basis of evidence that they wanted to introduce and did get to introduce after the trial was over and after the decision was made. Now, I know the rules allow a motion to amend the findings after a decision, obviously, but in this case, the offer and the evidence was always available to the respondent at trial, and they elected not to try to introduce their evidence. That's my argument. That's what it's going to be. And by the court changing its order without an evidentiary hearing, because she granted the motion, I think, to reopen, but simply relied on the evidence accompanying the motion, my client was deprived of due process. And he was denied of due process for several reasons.
Mr. Mannion, it's Judge Riley. I didn't see that you made that due process argument either below or in your brief to this court.
Your Honor, in the response, Mr. Luhmann, he referred to that lack of substantial violation due process. It was just an impeachment matter. And so even though the term might have not been used artfully, procedurally deficient when I talked about the rule and the lack of timely service and Mr. Luhmann's reference to there's substantial compliance or there's no showing of lack of process, I think it's fair for me to argue that.
Well, let's talk about the timing. I think you're referring to Rule 115, is that right?
That is correct.
And you do know that that Rule 115.01c says that the timing provisions of Section 115.03 and 0.04 of this rule do not apply to post-trial motions.
Right. I'm arguing, Your Honor, that you could consider that for the purposes of the unfairness, though, to Mr. Klug when he was not afforded an actual hearing to contest the old evidence that was available to be introduced for impeachment when the trial was over. In other words, he was not able to formulate and explain to the court probably why there had to be a bifurcation here. That's my argument is there's no evidence here.
Let's talk about the bifurcation. As I understand it, the parties agreed to bifurcate the trial to deal first with the boundary issue, adverse possession, and then if that was found, secondly, with damages. Is right. That your understanding of the stipulation?
That is correct. And when I say bifurcation, I don't mean that. I mean that the court considered amending its findings at the same time it considered the motion to reopen. So it really didn't reopen it. It just changed it without Mr. Ellens having the opportunity to what I'd say is rehabilitate himself. In other words, the court allowed this impeachment evidence. And Judge, if I can explain, at trial, Mr. Ellens introduced some exhibits that were objected to by respondents because there was lack of timely notice. There was a discovery problem there. The court granted.
Can you ask the district court if you could submit additional evidence?
No, what happened was they did not, they objected, the court admitted it, And my argument is they did not ask for a continuance.
No, but I'm wondering about the evidence. As I understand it, there were photos, aerial photos that the court considered after the trial.
Right. And
did you ask to submit any evidence in response to that?
Well, honestly, I didn't, Your Honor, because as the transcript showed, Mr. Ellen showed up for the hearing on the motion to reopen. He objected to the motion, and I think what happened was the court went ahead and reconsidered, or I should say reopened, without actually having a separate hearing where Mr. Ellens could say, wait a minute, now I see these photographs that I got 6 days before the hearing. I have my own photographs, or I have my own expert witness, or I have my own challenges to this. So basically Mr. Ellens was at a loss because, no, he didn't ask for continuance. He didn't bring it up, but neither did Mr. Klug bring up, I need a continuance. So basically what I'm saying is that same problem of not giving him a chance to respond exacerbates, you know, the problem that he had in dealing with that impeachment. You know, again, the parties' agreement said that the parties can have rebuttal and surrebuttal. They can have rebuttal and surrebuttal. I know this isn't rebuttal and surrebuttal based upon attorney's arguments. I know that. But the point was that, well, that's all we had this agreement was able to do. It says right in there, therefore I could put this evidence in. Well, Mr. Ellens was never given the opportunity to contest those affidavits at a proper hearing is what I'm saying.
But did he ask? I mean, I think that's Judge Riley's question. Did he ever ask to say, hey, hold on a second, you're going to put in some new evidence here, and I have a response to that, and I want a chance to say something about it?
No,
and I didn't see that in the record.
No, he didn't. He was pro se at that point.
Well, I get that, but I mean, Rule 59, which there was a motion for a new trial, and Rule 59 does allow for the introduction or the reopening of the evidentiary record in the discretion of the district court. So I'm having a hard time seeing how the district court abused its discretion when it received no notice from your client that, hey, hold on, you know, let's slow it down here. I've got something to say about this new evidence that they're introducing.
Well, Your Honor, my explanation of that is this is not an objection, evidentiary objection. It's not a hearsay objection or anything like that. It's a procedural objection. I don't think he had to enunciate like you would with an evidentiary objection. Let's say, for example,
so then what's the procedural problem here? Because when I read Rule 59, the district court has the discretion to reopen the record in a court trial.
Right. But my point is that it never did reopen it properly. It reopened the case at the same time it considered the motion to reopen. It was all one bundle.
And so then help me understand, what's the case law that says the district court has to do something different than what it did?
Well, I think the term, Your Honor, reopen, and the rule should be read that if you don't grant a new trial and you are going to amend your findings, the case law that I think in my brief says you can't consider, and I know counsel says, well, these are divorce cases. You can't consider evidence outside the record, which means anything that wasn't brought up at court, unless there is a motion or there is a reopening of the case. That's my argument. I know it's not a Rule 6.
Are you familiar with the case of Chin versus Zoet? Are you?
Pardon me? No, I'm not.
It's at 418 Northwest 2nd 191. And there's a footnote 2, that goes directly to the procedure that happened here. And the Court of Appeals, in a precedential opinion, said that what happened in that case, which is similar to what happened here, was proper under the rules.
The cases that I have read, Your Honor, I think in my brief, is that the court, when the court was sustained, the court at least made findings that there would be no prejudice to the other party, that the reason for a reopening was, you know, reasonable. It was like a Rule 60 analysis. So in other words,
we're under Rule 59, we're not under Rule 60.
I realize that, but the cases that I read, and I know that whatever is in the brief that all I can point to, is that the courts, when they said, that's okay that you did that, They also went further and said, there's no showing that any expert was needed. There's no showing that any prejudice would occur. There's no showing. I think that's the problem. That is the problem here, Your Honor, that the judge should have, in my opinion, for proper process, made the analysis before it reopened. And it reopened at the same time I made the motion, so it never made any findings of this, as to whether my client would be prejudiced by it, whether that prejudice could be accommodated. What would the reason be? I know there's some cases that talk about that, even though it's not a Rule 60, it's a reopen. I think the court needs to look at those when it decides. And then when it decides to reopen, my client,
the process, even though you didn't raise it, is notice of what's going on and an opportunity to be heard. And in this case, your client received the affidavit and photos 6 days before the hearing. So he had notice of what the other side was going to argue, and he had an opportunity to be heard because there was a hearing on this motion, both for a new trial and for amended findings.
Yeah. The reason I disagree, Your Honor, he had notice that the court was going to be asked to amend its findings, grant a new trial, or reopen. It's right in their motion as to reopen. He did not know that the court would take that evidence as part of reopening, but would consider that to reopen the case. I think that's just really critical. If I showed up
59.01, and I'm reading now from this footnote in the case that I referenced, since appellants also moved for a new trial, the court was permitted to consider the affidavits that it submitted, that the appellant submitted.
Yeah, and I think that's only if they are granted a new trial. If they are asking a request and that's denied, the new trial is denied, I believe the cases show that you can't consider evidence not introduced in court at the original trial unless it's reopened. And in reopening, you've got to. This isn't a new trial, Your Honor. This is a reopening. And to reopen something, I think you need to, first of all, say, I'm reopening it, rather than say, you want me to reopen it? I'll think about it. Then you reopen it the same, basically the same hearing.
So you're familiar with Minnesota practice, that treatise on how Minnesota courts work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It says, this is with regard to Rule 52, permits a motion for amended findings to be combined in the alternative with a motion for a new trial. Both motions require the court to perform similar, although different functions in reviewing the propriety of the original decision. The motion for amended findings restricts the court to consider the evidence submitted at trial. A motion for a new bench trial permits the court to take additional testimony and then amend the findings of fact and conclusions of law. A combined motion provides the court with the opportunity to review the former evidence and consider any new evidence. So that's what the judge did in this case.
Right. My point is that the court considered the affidavit for opening the case or a new trial or amended findings as evidence. And as proper procedure, I think as part of the rules, that my client should have been able to say, well, that's the evidence they want to produce. I need to be able to rebut that rather than just, I don't want this to happen. He should be able to rebut that.
And he didn't ask to do that. There's nowhere in the record that he said, hey, wait a minute, I have some evidence.
Right. I know that he was pro se and that's no excuse. But even if he had a lawyer and the lawyer said, I object, that combined with the fact that the notice was so short, and I know it's not mandatory, the court may apply this rule. I think all these things are compound the error where the judge should have said, okay, to give my client fairness, would say, okay, I'll take it under advisement as to whether to grant the new trial or amend the findings or reopen it. I'll let you know my decision. The courts then basically reopened, considered testimony, but didn't tell the parties that the court was even going to do that. She just took the affidavit as the testimony. When you take testimony, especially when the parties have this agreement, my client should be able to rebut that, not just show up at the hearing and say, I object to having the hearing. There should be a hearing no matter what to allow my client to rebut that impeachment evidence. That's my point. So I think this is another bite of the apple because the parties who had this evidence, the respondent who had this evidence available at trial. And by the way, what happened was Mr. Ellens introduced photographs. The court relied on those photographs in determining his credibility. The other side objected, didn't want him admitted. The court says overruled. The other side didn't ask for a continuance, even though the very same pictures that they came up with on their motion was available to them. They waited until the court made its decision. They hedged their bets. And then when the court ruled against them, they decided to basically ask for permission to reopen that they never asked for before. A continuance, I should say. This is really a request for a continuance, it turns out, because they are doing the very same thing they had an opportunity to do and didn't do at the time of trial. And my point is that in that process, there's an unfairness.
Counsel, I see that your time has expired. So if you just want to sum up quickly.
Yeah. And lastly, I think the agreement that the parties reached talked about this. And to say that only applied to damages would be nonsensical, because why would you have an agreement if the damages would only be relevant? The witnesses that you had at trial, you could call again, but it's got to be relevant to damages. So, you know, I see there's no need for that agreement other than to support what I said.
All right, counsel, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. All right, sure. Thank you. Mr. Luman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Dwight Luman. I represent the respondents in this case. I'll start by just pointing out that the appellants in this case did not object to the timeliness of this affidavit. It was not raised at the motion. A request for additional time to submit new evidence wasn't made. And to the contrary, as I pointed out in my brief, Mr. Ellens argued the merits, the substantive matter of that affidavit repeatedly. He spent almost all of his time focusing on that. And so it's, you know, there was no objection made by Mr. Ellens. And that really applies to really the first three issues that were raised by the appellant on appeal. Those issues dealing with this new evidence, either no objection was made or no argument was made regarding those issues, either through written submissions to the court, which Mr. Ellens had the opportunity to do, or really orally at the hearing. There was very little to no arguments on the merits of those issues. And that's true. Even if you take out the issue of the subsequent affidavit, those are arguments that were made initially in respondent's motion weren't really argued by Mr. Ellens at the hearing.
Explain to me, how do you even, getting to Mr. Mannion's argument, how do you even consider this new evidence if it was available to you at the original trial? You chose not to offer it, and after you receive an adverse decision, you then want to basically continue the trial. How is that permissible under the rules?
So the fact that we chose not to submit it, I think, is probably not accurate. As Mr. Mannion alluded to, that testimony was offered at trial, had not been disclosed. There was evidence regarding the location of this fence to the north that was submitted at trial that really hadn't been disclosed. And so we objected, and in the heat of the moment, we didn't really have time to go back and look at those photographs. And over our objection, the court considered and admitted the evidence that we objected to. And so it really wasn't until after we completed the trial when I sat down with my client and he actually pointed this out to me. I think that coupled with the idea that the location of that fence to the north, the subject matter of the affidavit, really, I don't think was was relevant to the issues, the things that we were asking of the district court. And so I think because of that, I always saw, you know, kind of that testimony regarding the location of that fence and the evidence and the argument regarding it is kind of a red herring. So I suppose I probably dismissed it, and just in the heat of the, the trial, didn't think it was very important. It wasn't until after we got the judgment and the court seemed to kind of focus on that, and then sitting down with my client and having him point out to me actually why that testimony was could be called into question, was when I felt that it necessary to submit that. And it was really simply, I think, provided as an offer of proof on our motion for a new trial or for additional testimony. I think that was the purpose in providing it to the court. And so we did, I did so as soon as I was aware of it. And again, after I became, after the court's order, when it became apparent to me that the court was focused on this issue, which again, I saw as a red herring from the beginning. And I can explain that further. What we were asking the court to do was locate the historic northwest corner and then simply connect that corner along the north boundary to an oak tree that was in the fence line, and then ultimately to the existing fence line that was undisputed. And then at the same time, from that northwest corner point, then to connect a line from that point to the south to the existing fence line. And so we weren't really asking the court to locate those feed sack posts, as they were referred to, on the west boundary. We weren't asking the court to do that. And so the location of that fence to the north on Mr. Ellens's property used, and my client testified to that as far as his ability and or how he placed those feed stack posts on the west boundary. And because we weren't asking the court to locate those posts,
counsel, I think. Mr. Lumen, there you are, sir. I think we were having some challenges with you froze. We did stop the clock at 9:02, so you do have the remaining time. If we see any other additional problems, we'll alert you right away and stop the clock. If you are experiencing additional bandwidth issues, if you want to turn off your video, you're welcome to do that too, sir, at your option, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor. And I apologize. I've been using the same setup for almost a year and I haven't had any issues. So I'm not sure what the problem is.
Don't worry about it. It happens. We're completely sympathetic and we understand. So why don't you go ahead with your argument, okay? Thank you.
So I'm not really sure where I was, but I think what I was getting at, Your Honors, is that because these issues weren't raised by the appellants in this case, then I think what the court was really left with is, you know, was there sufficient evidence to support the decision and whether the judgment is supported by the law? I think these procedural issues, because they weren't raised at the trial court level, I don't know that this court can actually review those issues. And I know a question was asked of me. I'm not sure if you heard my response to that question. I can elaborate on that if needed, but.
I think you had, for the most part, addressed the question that was asked, so.
Okay. And I don't know that I have anything else to offer on those issues. I'd be happy to answer any more questions that the court had. Otherwise, I don't know that I need to continue unless there's any more questions.
Great. Is there anything else from the panel this morning? Judge Flory, anything else?
Nothing, thanks.
Okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Lumen. Mr. Manning, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Just 1 second while the marshal resets the clock. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think that the court has identified really what's going on here, and that is after the fact, after the decision was reached, Mr. Luman seeks to offer additional evidence. The argument is, well, my client never really objected. Well, they never asked for continuance. That would be a strategic decision on their part. That was a strategic decision on their part. My client could have, the other side could have said, wait a minute, Judge, let me talk to my client. We'd like a continuance, to consider a continuance request. He could have looked at Mr. Klug and asked him, what do you think? They could have gone on. But they decided to strategically say, not do that. And what happened, Judge, Your Honors, is that the trial court judge then took what they submitted after the trial, completely eviscerating, or almost completely eviscerating, my client's credibility, and saying so far as to say, these findings are not credibly supported by Mr. Ellens because his pictures aren't credible. What he said was shown in these pictures isn't credible. So much, if not all, of his testimony was totally discounted, which was critical to the outcome of this case on that motion for amended findings or a new trial or to reopen. So, and my point is that when you have that happen, you don't have to say to the court, Your Honor, I object. And by the way, you didn't, I need the 6 days. I need more than 6 days service. My objection is based on this rule, because it's not an evidentiary objection. Evidentiary objections, you better say, objection hearsay, or that issue is not going to be preserved. Here it's procedural, and it ties directly to what's happened here, and that is another bite of the apple, another basically a continuation of the trial. And what is being imposed on my client is, well, that's what you were in, and you should have had that day when the court heard the case. You better have had witnesses. And so if the court says you have any witnesses or anything, you'd have, well, I need a continuance to get some. But that didn't happen. The court took it under advisement that whether she would grant the motion to reopen amended findings or new trial. And when it came down to reopening, that is when she could consider the new evidence, but on the condition or the fairness that my client would be given some sort of analysis as to whether this was fair to him, whether he'd be prejudiced, that sort of thing. I know it's not a Rule 60, but I think those same elements would apply. And so I think that's that pretty well sums it up, Your Honors. I don't think you can disconnect the triangle from the rest of the property. The judge in her findings, I know it's very painstaking and they're quite long and the court spent a lot of time on this. It was, I think, a 5-day trial. She basically talked about Mr. Ellens's impeachment to discredit a lot of his case, not just the green triangle. And the green triangle really was related to by the respondents in their brief as being part of deciding the boundary, not an independent piece of land, but part of deciding the boundary. And so to say, well, let's grant the okay with the green triangle and then the whole judgment, that can stand. I think that would be error, because I think what the judge has decided is that green triangle relates to the rest of the boundary. It's not just a piece by itself. So the whole thing fails. I ask the court to reverse the decision and to reinstate the original judgment of the court, or in the alternative, to instruct the court to remand it for further proceedings to give my client an opportunity at an evidentiary hearing to produce evidence to rehabilitate himself as a witness. That's only fair. That should have been done, but it wasn't, because they didn't ask for a continuance to do what they ended up doing after the case was decided. So that's my argument. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted. We'll take it under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory time period.